A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Oi, the boys on Footy Prime on occasion are known to use vulgarities and frankly appalling language, and sometimes tales are quite adult in nature. So keep the volume down if there are kiddies around. And thank you for listening.
Oh, let's go!
Booty, booty.
It's time to get this party started.
Booty, booty.
It's time to get this party started. You know that we are the number one show. So grab your fucking mitts and now it's time to go. Cause it's the
booty, booty.
It's time to get this party started. It's the
booty, booty.
It's time to get this party started. With Danny, Jimmy, Gregor, Andy, Jim, and JC. All we know and all we talk about is
booty, booty.
It's time to get this party started tonight.
You're listening to This Just In on Footy Prime, your almost daily footy fix.
It's a long weekend. Happy long weekend, footy primers. Craig, Jimmy, Wonga, JC. How's the long weekend going? Not much happening, really, in the football world, right?
The Me Too 4.
It started off with a bang. It started off with a bang with me leaving my my bag on a sidewalk in Toronto.
Yeah, can we regale that story? Because as hilarious as it is, it's equally as disturbing and worrying about you, Wonga. Can you please tell the primer audience out there just what happened to you this weekend?
So I am visiting family in Ottawa, and I decided that I would pack up 3 or 4 bags because shoes need a bag and clothes need a bag, and I have a CPAP machine for all you ladies out there who find that attractive. The Darth Vader wong. I know you guys love that. I know you women would adorn me with that. So I have 4 or 5 bags that I have to pack, and I forgot the keys to my car the first time going out with one of my bags, and I left it on the sidewalk. Well, Dan Wong leaves things on the sidewalk and drives away. So I lost everything in my bag. It was my old Sportsnet bag, Craig. You may have had one at one point.
I got it's 2.
Oh, you do? Oh, oh you got you one grabbed it. And so all of my medicine, all of my clothes, my toothpaste, my overnight regalia.
So you couldn't get a hard on then?
Oh, jeez.
How long did you go for?
What do you mean?
Like in Ottawa. How long?
I'm still in Ottawa.
So the bag could still be there?
Yeah. You basically, someone has picked up, is wearing Dan Wong's clothes. There's someone in my neighborhood walking around with my clothes right now.
So some guy wearing plaid shirt.
And taking my gout magazine, gout medicine, taking my gout
and medicine. And having a great sleep.
Yes, exactly. They might even be in my house right now. May have left keys in there.
Well, so we could broadcast your address to the audience. And if anyone's close by, they could walk by and see the bag still there.
Mm-hmm. Well, Craig offered, he said, hey, Wonger, I'll go by. And he goes, oh, I forgot. I don't have my car. So that did it for Craig. That was as far as Craig went for me. I don't have my car. I realized he doesn't have his car. And I thought, oh, well, this is my friend, Craig Forrest.
You should put a little treat there, too.
What's that?
Direction that lasts longer than 4 hours. Go to your
oh, my hard-on pills.
Hey, Craig, where's your car? It hasn't gone missing again, has it?
No, Cheyenne's got it.
Okay. Okay. Because yeah. Remember last time you lost your car and you thought it was stolen, but it wasn't stolen.
He reported it stolen.
That was amazing.
We just found out that there is a callback on it from a few months ago. Something malfunctioned with the key and driving off the road and crashing and all that kind of shit. So probably okay. Should have had a few months ago, but so far so good.
Yeah. And that's Footy Prime's long weekend so far. What stories they are. Craig got a callback. Wonga left his bag on the sidewalk. Jimmy, JC, anything to match those exciting stories?
Yeah, I could tell you one thing. I went over to a friend's. He lives out in the country. And everybody knows I'm not one for the country and camping and all that shit. So they ended up lighting this bonfire. And I'm sitting maybe 10 feet away from it. And they've got these big pine crates that they're lighting, probably about 7 of them. And I didn't know this, but I found out they use the cedar leaves and all that. It's like diesel. That stuff just lights like crazy. So as I'm sitting there and the smoke's blowing, now I'm starting to get a little bit pissed off because I hate it. I'm like, oh, here we go. Smoke in my face. It's getting dark, a little bit cool. And this spark comes out of this fire, lands on my good shirt, and starts putting a hole in it. Now, I thought I'm getting eaten by a bug or something, right? Fuck, bugs. Giving it one of these. And I look down. My shirt is on fire. Massive hole. It's burning my skin. I looked at my buddy, and he's like, you're on fire. I said, no fucking kidding. What's happening here? Patting it all out. Everybody's laughing. And I went, that's enough. I'm out. Take me home, please. And I went home. With a big hole in my shirt.
What an absolute freaking wuss. Jesus. Yeah. Hole in your shirt and you demand to be driven home. I'm done. I don't like the outdoors.
My skin was sizzling.
It's all part of the experience.
Yeah.
It was a nice shirt as well. I'm so mad.
Oh, was it like a scooping V-neck?
There actually was a V-neck. I'll show you the burner. You'll laugh.
The negative. He was wearing his cock and balls were out.
Well, listen, I guess everyone's weekend can only get better at this point, right? So that's good to hear. It's been a pretty good weekend for a couple of teams, specifically Man City and Nottingham Forest. Let's start with the champions, shall we? Sorry, Jimmy, we'll get to Forest, I promise. Let's start on Man City, beating Chelsea 1-0. They were crown champions, of course, on Saturday when Arsenal lost to Forest. But here we are. I mean, I don't think anyone's surprised. There may have been a slight window of, a few weeks there where, I mean, I think I said, yeah, Arsenal are going to win this thing. They didn't in the end. City did it their fifth in 6 years. In the end, just cruising to another championship. Pep says they need to win the Champions League to really become a legitimately great team, to be considered a great team. It's all about legacy and winning that Champions League, Craig. Is that something you agree with?
Yes, I do. Yeah, at this point. It doesn't mean they're not a great team and he's not done a fantastic job regardless, even if he hasn't ever won the Champions League with Man City. But you need to win the Champions League to cap off really what is an amazing season with Haaland as well, breaking all sorts of records. And, you know, really the changing was this 5 and 6 years they've won it. And remember last year, they didn't even play with a striker. So
not really, not a legitimate one, no.
Not legitimately with a legit striker, but you look at Pep, just how he can change that team, bring players in. And remember there was a part of the season when people were like, some pundits were giving it the old, oh, they're too reliant on Haaland. Like, what? Yeah, scoring a goal a game, like at least, like, yeah, okay, I'll be reliant on him too. But brilliant, absolutely fantastic. They just absolutely grinded Arsenal down day by day, game by game.
Yeah. Their depth is unbelievable. Even at that match there, when you're watching the players coming off the bench, Haaland comes off, De Bruyne comes on. It was ridiculous. Ridiculous. Do you think they'll win the treble?
Yeah.
I do as well.
I do. Yeah. I mean, listen, they're the big favorites in both games, right?
Yeah.
Inter Milan in the Champions League, United in the FA Cup. Finals have, you know, their own kind of, you know, there is this weird beast of finals. Strange things can happen, obviously, in 90 minutes or 120 minutes, penalties, right? But I just don't see anything other than a treble at this point. It'd be a big shock for them not to get the treble at this point, put it that way.
They're in peak form too, aren't they?
Yeah, and that's it, right? I mean, they rested 9 players against Chelsea. 9 players.
Yeah.
There were 9 changes, right? There were 64 goals on the bench yesterday.
That's more than most.
It's more than Chelsea. Well, Haaland's got more than Chelsea by himself, right? I mean, it's just, it's nuts what they've managed to do. Now, we should mention this. If we don't, we'll get in trouble by people on Twitter. You have to mention the fact that they're facing all these FA charges before you give them any credit whatsoever. And obviously, this is from, I think, was it 2012 to 2018, I think it was?
Yeah,
financial fair play irregularities. I mean, yes, it's clearly a problem. It's in the courts. And if they get found guilty, then we'll have to address it, right? But regardless, they're still a great team. Are there some murkiness to those numbers and how they built this team? Yeah, of course there are, 100%. And if they're found guilty, they should be hammered by the authorities. But until they are, I don't know what more we can really say. We can't say, oh, they are guilty, because we don't know. I'm not a forensic accountant, sorry.
I'm sure there's a little shenanigans going on.
Absolutely. Well, I mean, listen, when you sign the big sponsorship, for example, for your stadium, right? Etihad, which is a company that you're in his own. Right? It raises some eyebrows.
Well, it's like
that'd be fun doing that deal, wouldn't it?
It's how much like you want? Sure.
Taking it out of one pocket and putting it in the other pocket.
Yeah.
Yeah. I would love to do that deal.
Yeah, that's right. You can't lose, can you?
Yeah.
Here's a billion.
So it'd be like
a bit short. Maybe a little like bit more.
My pie company sponsoring Footy Prime.
Yeah.
Kind of, right? I mean, it's probably not $100 million deal. Probably.
Actually, nothing like it.
$25. You know what? We'll give you 30. How about that?
Yeah.
Sure. What the hell? $35.
Sharms is negotiating with himself. He's the two Spider-Men pointing at each other. You.
Hey, I'm a married man. Of course, I've got to negotiate with myself now and again.
Oh, jeez. Go find my bag. Dick pills.
Get a stiff back.
Yep. okay, this Guard of Honor, right? So Chelsea getting a Guard of Honor. Have you guys ever been involved in a Guard of Honor by having to be the Guards of Honor as the champions walk through?
Not like that, but for testimonials I have been, yeah.
But never for the champion. It's going to be tough, right? Especially at Chelsea, who entered the season feeling pretty good about themselves, right? Thinking, oh, yeah, we've got a great manager. We've got great depth. We could give a run with City for the title now. And then you fast forward 8 months and, you know, they got onto their third manager. New one coming in. Not to mention the fact that they're in, 13th place? Is it 13th now? I think they're in 13th place. Could be 14th for Leno at this point. It's kind of switched. It's changed. It was going to be pretty tough for some of those seasoned Chelsea players. The new boys don't give a shit, right? Who cares? I know João Felix wasn't there today, this weekend, but for some of those seasoned Chelsea players, it's got to be tough. You're Raheem Sterling, for example. You're seeing your old team, you know, walk through. Not easy.
Yeah. Why not? Who cares?
You're 12th right now, too, Sharms.
My apologies to Chelsea. You're 12th. 13th. You don't think the players give a shit, Craig?
No. No. Why would you? That's a class team. You're basically watching come out there. Yeah, doesn't mean nothing. I thought Edward Sterling got pretty good reception, too, right? I mean,
yeah, he did. I think if you're Chelsea as well, you're looking at that match and knowing how much money you've spent this season, and you're playing against Man City's reserve team near enough, and you're getting beat. Where does Chelsea go from here? Like, they are miles off.
Well, you get a new manager, Pochettino comes in, right? Is that confirmed now? I think it's confirmed. If not, it's going to be confirmed.
Yeah.
What's his first job, Jimmy? If you're Pochettino, you've been watching games now, right? You've had time off. You've been following Chelsea closely. You're coming in. Obviously, it's summertime. There'd be a little break.
Yeah.
What is your first job?
Well, you're going to have to put your wish list together, see whose contracts are up.
They're all on long-term. They just spent $1 billion on
who you can move out. And how are you going to sell some of these guys? Because that, I don't think that squad's good enough. He's going to want to run pieces in.
He'll run them. The preseason is going to be ridiculous. He's going to run them, and the expectations physically is going to be unbelievable. They're going to, that'll be the first thing he does. It'll be work rate and fitness.
He's renowned for that too, right? Here's that. What's it called? Yeah. The Gakko test or something? He does this weird thing. It's a bit like the beep test, just even worse, apparently. Players hate it, but they understand that it actually gets them really fit, and they appreciate it in game situations.
Mm-hmm. But well, forget we'll see. Chelsea can suck it. Nottingham Forest and Steve Cooper has done an incredible job saving Nottingham Forest. Got to tell you, they stuck with their manager. West Ham stuck with their manager. Both teams are going to be safe. Other 8 or 9 managers have been fired in the bottom half of the Premier League. And what for? Like, seriously, this manager firing stuff. If you got a guy that you really, really believe in, stick with him. Stick with him. If he's a good manager, he's a good manager. They just threw 27 players at Steve Cooper and said, put this together in the Premier League. That's the toughest job there is. He should be a player, a manager of the year, Jimmy.
Yeah. No, it was a remarkable job.
Unbelievable.
And you're right. And even the owner came out and said, he goes, we made the right choice sticking with Steve Cooper. Yeah. And he done the job. And I do think if they got rid of him and they brought somebody else in, they would have got relegated.
So, Jimmy, 3 months ago, you and Craig, I remember you chose Ten Hag at the time. That was in February. And Craig chose Arteta. Has your brain changed around manager of the year this year? From that 2.5 months ago, 3 months ago.
Yeah.
Yeah. Where are you at now? Where are you
Steve
at now?
Steve Cooper.
Really, eh?
Yeah, I think he's done an unbelievable job. Considering when they were in that relegation spot for ages and then being clinical right towards the end there and getting the results. I think they got 30 points from their home games and only lost, I think, 2 games or something like that at home. So their home record was amazing. They struggled on a row, but I think overall, I thought he's done an incredible job. And it's like what Craig said there. When you've got that many players that have come in and try to get them all to perform together, and you could see at the end of the match as well, all the players running over to him, giving a hug, they respect him. Yeah. They probably know how difficult that job is for him. So,
yeah.
I think
it was, let me ask you this then. What's the biggest surprise? Is it Forest surviving or is it Arsenal finishing second?
That's a good question, Sharms.
Well, before the season started, they would have taken second. It's just the manner in what they did with leading it by so much. But there's also a big story with Brighton and Hove Albion making the Europa League. And that manager there, what a fantastic job Brighton have done.
That's a great point.
You know, and one thing about Forest too, the timing as well, to play Arsenal. We're looking down the road at Forest's schedule going, holy shit, they got Arsenal coming up. Arsenal were basically dead in the water. They knew that they were finishing second and couldn't have had a better time to play them going from total confidence to, you know, just dragging their asses to the finish line now.
Yeah.
I mean, I tell you what, manager of the year, I don't care about it. Do you? I mean, who cares? But there's some great contenders, Steve Cooper being absolutely one of them, De Zerbi being one of them for sure. Even Arteta will get some votes, and so he should, right? What about Thomas Frank at Brentford? Second-year team, 9th in the table right now. Just brilliant. Aston Villa, Unai Emery comes in. They're 7th now. Gary O'Neill at Bournemouth, right? Remember Scott Parker started the season as coach at Bournemouth?
Yeah.
And he goes, you know what? We just haven't got the resources or the squad to survive this year. Out you go, son. In comes Gary O'Neill, interim manager, becomes full-time. They're 15th now in the table.
Mm-hmm.
There's some really good, you know, choices here. I mean, Lopetegui hasn't been there long enough at Wolves, but they're a team in the relegation zone. 13th now. 2 points behind Chelsea. Roy Hodgson. Points in 7 of 9 games since taking over at Crystal Palace.
Yeah.
Silver. Eddie Howe. Eddie Howe.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, we talk about all these gaffers being fired. No, it's bullshit. It's tough being a manager. There's some really good managers having great seasons in the Premier League this year.
And if Pep wins the treble, is that a foregone conclusion? How do you not give it to a guy who's won the treble?
If he wins the treble, he gets it.
Right?
Man, you know what? You think they will? You think they will?
I think
you have to, don't you, I guess?
You have to.
Give him one, just what he needs, another one.
Well, the level of football City play is just insane. I mean, they are one team that, if as a neutral, I watch them whenever they're on, whenever chance you have to, I watch City because the way they're just unbelievable footballing talent.
Yeah. Well, I think the thing with City is and Pep is that you could put any manager in that squad, right? And I think they'd be a very, very good team, right? There's no doubt, right? But I don't think they'll be as good as with Pep. What he does, he makes players better, right? He challenges them. He changes systems. He defines the way the game's played in England, in Europe over the years, right? John Stones, a centre-half, is playing in the midfield. Kyle Walker, wing-back / right-back, played centre-half. You know, these players redefine themselves. Haaland, like we said, you know, Haaland, he was playing great. The team was struggling, though, for part of this season, right behind Chelsea. And like you said, some idiots, Greg, some idiots said they were better without him. Don't know who those people were, but they're idiots. but those idiots did say, well, but it's Pep, he'll figure it out. And guess what? He figured it out. And now I think you got to say City is as good as we've seen in English football. And that's including the great invincible team of Arsenal and the Fergie dominant teams. I think City would be nose to nose, if not better than those teams, don't you?
Absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah. They're amazing to watch.
Although we do get caught up in the you know, recent bias, I guess, as well.
Yeah, of course we do. Yeah, that's what we do as sports observers. Mm-hmm. Arsenal, by the way, they led for 248 days. First place. Now, this is interesting because we took out how great City were, and they were, and, you know, City deserving champions. But Arsenal, in the first half of the season, 50 points. 50. All right? They're going to win the championship. The second half, 31 points. Right? If Arsenal hadn't have crumbled, and they crumbled, that loss to City late in the season wouldn't have mattered. Right? And they would be crowned champions maybe this weekend, maybe earlier. So as great as City was, and was it 20? Is it 24 games in a hop now at the home with wins? Something like that. Mm-hmm. Anyway, regardless of what City did, Arsenal did drop points and they lost it. In which case, we're not saying Pep's going for the treble. We're not saying Pep's, you know, aren't going to be the greatest ever in this country.
Yeah.
Over 38 games, it just seems the cream rises right to the top just every single time. Very, very rarely that's not the case. And they hold on, and everybody thought they were going to give it up, and they didn't. That was Spurs' best chance to win something for a long time.
You know what? I'm going back to Arsenal's little run there, and I think it was April 6th, and they played – this is when it all kind of went pear-shaped. No, April 9th, they played Liverpool. They drew 2-2. Then the following weekend, they played West Ham, drew 2-2. Then after that, they drew with Southampton 3-3. And then they played Man City and lost 4-1.
That was it, wasn't it?
That was it.
Yeah.
That was the 9 points that they lost right there in that little spell there for over that couple of weeks.
And did they come back to tie Liverpool 2-2? In that one, I think they were down 2-0 and they came back.
Yeah, no. They were up.
Was it what?
They were up
2-0. They were up 2-0. Sorry, that's right.
And Liverpool came back.
Yeah, yeah, at Anfield, right? Yeah, they're up. So, I mean, they win that one. And then the next two games, which they should win. I mean, listen, with respect to the Hammers and to Southampton in particular, you got to win those games. Then we're talking about a very different narrative.
Yeah,
it's a long season, like you say, right? It's a long season. To be that consistent. And City dropped their points earlier in the campaign. And people will say that points is worth the same in September as they are in May. And yeah, of course they are. But I'm sorry, dropping points earlier in the campaign is a lot more serious than dropping them late in the campaign.
Sharms, why did you pretend that you didn't know that Liverpool came back? why did you ask that question? We know it's indelibly burnt in your brain that they came back in that match.
Well, no, because I think at that point in the season, I just dismissed Liverpool. It's been a shit season. They're going to finish, you know, outside European spots, you know, giving up. And then they put this run together and they brought the hope back. And then they dropped points.
I actually remember that game because I think Sharms turned it off. Like, I think he was like, nah, I'm done.
Oh, that was one of those, right? I hate Klopp. Get rid of him.
Yeah.
No, I haven't said that. No. I haven't got that far. Been great year though, hasn't it? But yeah, Forest surviving. I mean, that game, Gibbs White, is he a player of the year, Jimmy? Or would he give it to Brennan Johnston? I mean, both of them have been superb, but Gibbs White, this kid's going to be a superstar, isn't he?
Yeah, he's amazing. He covers so much ground. He's so good driving forward with the ball. He's a great player. What a signing he was. And he's only going to get better. And same with Brennan Johnston. Though Brennan Johnston, he's rapid. He causes havoc down those flanks. He's such a great player to watch. But that, for me, yeah, Gibbs White.
And the scenes post-match there. I mean, that City ground has been just a great place to watch football all year long. And I think a lot of Forest fans were losing faith, 3 weeks ago, 4 weeks ago? Tough running, including this Arsenal get match. Oh, well, there's the 0 points in that one, right? And you know, you stave off relegation and you're safe in the penultimate weekend. It's just amazing. Leeds very much in the mix to go down, of course. We should mention Leicester's playing later today against Newcastle. So obviously much can change maybe by the time you listen to this podcast. But West Ham beat Leeds 3-1. Big Sam hammering his subs in that one, saying they had no impact. And he says that, it's good to see because now we have a better idea of what needs to be done, essentially, this summer. I think he wants to be there for next year. There's more chance of Sam being there next year in the league championship than if they win survival and they go out for a bigger name?
That's yeah. Good question.
Probably right.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a very good point. But if he saved them, I think there's a chance he might keep a hold of them. But what a change in, styles of managers. I love watching play. They were fantastic to watch. We know what Sam's all about, and but now they're just losing games and not even fun to watch anymore.
Although that opening goal, the Rodrigo volley from a throw-in. That was pretty sweet, wasn't it?
Mm,
typical yeah. Big Sam, just launch it in there, into the Mexes, see what happens. And somehow Rodrigo was wide open. That was a nice finish.
It was. But at the end of the day, West Ham, a few weeks ago, another club that's been, Moyes has got to go. He's got to go. Week after week, they're calling for his head. And they stuck with him. And then in the end, you're like, yeah, European final, this conference final, it's fantastic. The club is buzzing about that. By the way, did you see the violence at that game when the ultras for Alkmaar attacked the family?
Knowlesy. Didn't we talk about that on Friday?
We did a little bit, yeah.
Yeah.
It's great. Then,
there was another guy too, a big heavy set guy that was just laying guys out one after another.
Well, the big guy with the gray hair? Right. That was Knowlesy.
Yeah.
The guy
at the top of the stairs was another guy.
Right. Okay.
Well, they're both at the top of the stairs, but just different sections, trying to just use that as the best point of defense because they could only come at them pretty much one at one, and they're just literally kicking them in the nuts, laying them out, flattening them out.
It reminded me of Star Wars, right? When you get all these stormtroopers who look really intimidating in these cool outfits, getting the shit kicked out of them by like two people. It was like Star Wars. All in these balaclavaed idiots.
These are probably just old. Inner city firm guys, and they're like, they're in their 60s and they're just laying out these teens like for fun.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Nothing to lose.
Ragdolling them.
I know. I don't know what Knowlesy's history is, whether he's got any association with firms. No, he hasn't, right?
He does not. Okay. He's really kind of shy about it, really. I've seen an interview, and there is a couple Twitter handles where people are saying they're scams because this man will never have a Twitter handle ever. So. Don't follow this guy because it's not him. He doesn't care at all. He doesn't see himself as a hero at all. But he probably saved a lot of people getting hurt because that's what they're trying to do. They all put these hoodies on, and it was sickening. There's a lot
it
of
was
shit
sickening going. Scenes. Yeah, yeah. When you see, there must have been 50 of them in those guys in the masks and the hoodies.
Yeah.
I mean, we've seen more and more of this. It seems in the last few months. Whether it's coming back to the game, I don't know. Alkmaar's had an issue for a long time. Dutch football in general, actually, has had a real issue with hooliganism for a long time.
Yeah. They might want to reorganize. They were shit.
Yeah.
I know. The lovely story, right? Oh, the money ball and all this, right? And turns out.
Do you know what makes me laugh though? Is like these guys, you know, when they go to fight like that, they're in the stands, they're watching the game, say 25 minutes, whatever it is. And then all of a sudden the hoods go up, the scarf go on, and then they go fight. Now, are they that stupid that they don't know that they've been already watched? There's cameras that know exactly where they are in the stadium. And the police can actually go back and be like, that's you, you numpty. We just know you put your head up and your scarf on. They know exactly who they are.
I would hope they have cameras. Maybe they don't in Hall, some grounds in Holland. They do in England, but I wonder, though.
Well, regardless, they're probably not the smartest human beings to begin with, right? If you're going to start a fight at a football match, you're not the smartest human being to start with. Kind of scum of the earth, really, aren't you? Let's be honest here.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Elsewhere this weekend in England, we mentioned Brighton making the Europa League for the first time, European football for the first time. That's amazing, by the way.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, good for them, what they've done. We'll see what happens this summer. McAllister is reportedly gone. Whether it's to Liverpool, please be Liverpool, please be Liverpool, please be Liverpool, or Arsenal, or someone else. Caicedo could be on his way out, but you know they're going to sign players we haven't heard of who are going to be brilliant. That's what they do. I mentioned Liverpool.
That charms. They will do that until they make mistakes. I mean, we see this happen before with clubs, but it's difficult. They're going to get torn apart again. They sell players, and they do bring in very good, but you can never sustain a position in Europe in the Premier League by doing that year after year. You just can't.
There's stories this morning about De Zerbi. Now, Napoli's an interesting situation in Italy right now, and that Spalletti and De Laurentiis is the owner. Don't seem to get on too well. His contract's up, but there's a two-year option for the club to re-sign him. And De Laurentiis has been saying some weird things in the press about clipping wings and allowing people to fly free. And Spalletti's saying, I have no idea what he's talking about, you know, but I'm out of contract. So there's been talk about De Zerbi going to Italy with Napoli. There'll be other rumors about De Zerbi within England, I think. I hope he stays where he is from a selfish standpoint because his teams play brilliant football. And I want to see what they do in Europe with a bit of money behind them.
Or do you take an opportunity like him as a coach to say, okay, we're going to get torn apart. There's no way I can play that football at that same level again. Very difficult. And take a big Italian job.
Maybe. But you look at the pressure on Napoli's next coach, if it's not Spalletti.
You say they have a two-year option in Brighton?
No. Napoli have a two-year option to re-sign Spalletti.
Okay.
I don't know. I mean, I think if it's not Spalletti, whoever walks into that job in Naples, I mean, you want to repeat that? You want to repeat this season? Good luck.
Yeah, exactly.
He's just dominated. It's tough. I think he's probably better off where he's staying, De Zerbi, but we'll see. Hey, listen, Napoli would be a draw too, and going back home, you understand why, but there will be a managerial merry-go-round as always is in the summertime.
Poor Insigne, Poor Insigne.
Yeah, we'll get to Insigne in a bit. We've got a lot of TFC to talk about in today's show. Jesus Christ. Quickly, Bobby Firmino, his last game at Anfield. Do you see his tears post-match? He loved it there. They loved him. They drew points with Villa, which is a bad result, given that you want to keep the heat on United for that last Champions League spot. But I think it's all but done now with United beating Bournemouth 1-0.
Yeah.
But Bobby Firmino brought some colour to the Premier League, that's for sure. He was fun. If he's leaving the Prem, I don't know where he's going, but if he's leaving the Prem, he lit it up with a smile, didn't he? No? Okay. Well, I thought it was a good joke personally, but I guess you guys didn't. So we'll move on. Jesus Christ. Tough crowd this Monday morning. Jesus.
Klopp's
Where's
wondering.
Amy?
Oh. Klopp's Was wondering where Bob's wondering whether he's going to take his dentist or not.
They've apparently signed a new sporting director, or about to. Some guy whose name I can't pronounce, some Germany veteran guy who's retired, came out of retirement, highly rated. So,
sorry, what does that mean? What does that mean as far as a sporting director? What do they do? I'm always
In Liverpool's case, club has the power. Most clubs, I think the sporting director has a power over the manager. They'll dictate who to sign. But essentially, they determine who they want. He goes out and tries to sign them.
Yeah, your sporting director is essentially a GM.
Oh, okay. Right. Okay. That makes sense.
So yeah, it'll be a fascinating summer. We should get Spain here. Real Madrid tied Valencia 1-1, and I'm sure you've seen it on social media. The Vinicius Jr. incident, racial abuse, not just from one fan. He was just hammered throughout the game to the point where he's in tears. And as per usual in Spain, it's dealt with terribly, appallingly. And he stays on, he completes the game, but he had well within his rights to walk off. The referee, in my opinion, was well within his rights to stop that game and get the players off the pitch. But again, it doesn't happen. And the fallout continues with the La Liga presidents going at it with Vinicius Jr. on social media, basically saying, listen, you had a chance to speak to us about this in meetings and you didn't show up. He's actually turned it on Vinicius Jr. The guy's been racially abused throughout the season. And it's not just him, right? In Spain, if you're black, you're being racially abused. It's pretty straightforward, but nothing gets done about it. We've seen some really bad scenes this season in particular. This is amongst the worst we've seen.
That was incredibly hard to watch. It really was. But there are protocols. Forget it for the fact, and there's the other side of it that I can't believe one player on either side isn't just say, this is enough, like just unite and walk off. That's another story in itself. But there is protocols from FIFA that the referee can make an announcement, stop play, make an announcement. If it continues, you stop play, you leave the field for 15 minutes and you resume play after that. If they come back out and it continues, then it comes to the step where you actually stop play completely. I don't think any steps were made. Certainly no stoppage of play. So all in all, it was a failure by everybody. And I don't know if you saw Ancelotti's interview after as well. He was brilliant because they wanted to talk about the game. He's like, you want to talk about the game? No, let's talk about this. This is a problem. And he would have been within his rights too, to say, listen, referee isn't following the protocol. So we're going to take it from step one right to step three here, and we're going to walk off. Yeah. And I don't think anybody would have, shown anything but respect and doing something like that.
You would think as well the ref and the captains would have got together and said, enough's enough, let's get off this pitch.
Well, do the protocol. At least the referee can say, let me do the protocol. Make the announcement to the crowd. Remember, this happened with Mexico recently. And it didn't get to the third step, but the game was stopped and the announcement for 15 minutes and the announcement was made because of the chant.
Gay slurs, yeah.
Yeah.
Chant.
So fortunately for Mexico, it didn't get to it, but they pushed it almost to the fact I thought they were going to get there because I couldn't see the fans stop doing it. But that's how close it's got in CONCACAF too.
And here's the thing, right? I mean, people say, and rightly so, when you see it in sports, it's just a microcosm of a societal problem, which it is. But within the context of sport, you can affect change. You can do something about it, right? Sadly, in society, it's very difficult because it's so deeply ingrained in some parts of society. And in a football arena, you can stop the actual event itself as a protest. And you can single out those people. And you can ban them for life. And you can ban that team from having home games in front of crowds. You can make a real statement, right? But they just don't in certain parts of the world, right?
Mm-hmm. They don't. It's hard to single out people because the whole stadium is doing it.
Yeah.
Like, fuck. What are we talking about here? Like, it's just absolutely sickening stuff.
Have you guys, Craig or Jimmy, ever been witness to any of that in the Prem or in England?
England's got a side of it too. And most countries in Europe tend to. Some are just worse than others. But when we follow in that Europa League, when you're seeing, teams from Hungary, Serbia, Croatia, Italy, Spain, England, it's like Scotland. Like, it's happening everywhere at certain levels. They just stricter about it. It seems.
Yeah. I mean, the bottom line is in the Premier League, for example, there's isolated incidents. It happens. right? And it's not dealt with probably there either. But it's just not to the same extent as you're seeing other leagues around Europe. Yeah. It's just not. That's not to say England as a country has got massive issues, right? But I'm removing that for a second. Within the Premier League specifically, compared to La Liga, compared to Serie A, as much as it's not perfect, far from it, it's not as bad.
It's almost like they, you know, the Spanish incident where they kind of just want to brush it under the carpet, like it didn't happen. But in today's society and world with social media, you can't brush things under the carpet because it's everywhere. And so you've got to address it head on.
Now, there is also the side where, you know, football isn't responsible for, you know, changing, well, being responsible for, you know, cultural problems around the world, but they certainly can play a part. And they certainly, from a signage point of view, you know, no to racism, they throw all these things out, but they certainly aren't doing enough. And all the black players I play with, you know, Rio Ferdinand's been very open about this after this incident as well. Ian Wright, these former black players, they talk about it. It's still continuing on and on. And until they actually snap down on it, really snap down. But I think they're so afraid that if they do, there's going to be hardly any football. There's going to be empty stadiums everywhere, like, because it's rampant. It happens every single weekend. So
yeah. Well, Vinicius Jr. this morning is being linked to moves outside of Spain because of this. He's kind of had enough.
Yeah.
Now we'll see. That's just the rumor mill churning. You know, I don't know. For him to leave Real Madrid would be a statement. That's a damn sure.
Oh yeah.
If that was the reason. But we'll see what the authorities do. You know, La Liga have a very poor history in dealing with this, as does UEFA. Very poor, in fact, laughable history in dealing with it. So we'll see what the next step is. But it will continue again next season, unfortunately, unless they really come down hard. Germany, Dortmund's in first place, by the way. Did you see that? One game left next weekend.
Come on, Dortmund.
Dortmund are about to stomp all over the dynasty that is Bayern Munich. How much fun's that?
That's a great story. How many Bayern won in a row? 10? 11?
Yeah, 10 or 11 is up there.
Right? It's something
I think
like...
it may have been... I think it's 2012, the last time Dortmund won? I think it's around there.
Yeah.
I like it. I don't mind a dynasty myself. Personally, I don't mind a dynasty. You know, if it doesn't go on forever, ever. But it's good to have that big, bad beast, right, that you can't beat. It's not necessarily a bad thing.
Mm-hmm.
And then when they get dethroned, it's a big story. But 10 or 11 in a row is a bit much. It really is.
Yeah. Yes.
Well, it was a Celtic one again in Scotland, right, Jimmy? And that was
It's like Scottish football, isn't it?
12 and 13 or something like that. Is that crazy?
You're just dying to see somebody else win it once, aren't you?
Yeah. Oh, thank God. Rangers won it for a change.
Yeah.
Oh, Christ.
50.
Then you want to say, oh, my God, Greenock Morton, well done. Finally.
Yeah. Well, what was it? Was it like 89 was the last time and it was Aberdeen that won it?
Fergie's, 85, wasn't it?
Is it 85?
Wasn't it Fergie's Aberdeen?
It might have been, yeah. I don't know. That's right.
Well, let me keep talking. I'll have a quick look here. Let me have a quick look here. All right. Look at that stuff. Wonga, fill the dead air.
When was the last time another team besides Dortmund or Bayern won the Bundesliga?
I think we just discussed that, didn't we?
Was it Wolfsburg, was it?
It is, very well done.
It's Wolfsburg?
Yeah, Wolfsburg in 2009.
Dortmund won it in 12.
No, I said 11. Other than Dortmund and...
Oh, other than Dortmund, okay, gotcha.
Other than Dortmund and Bayern, yeah.
Was that Wolfgang Wolf's Wolfsburg, wasn't it?
I don't know that. It's a little too much for me.
I think it was.
And then in 2007, Stuttgart won.
When did Werder Bremen win it? Because Werder Bremen won it with Stolle.
2004, Werder Bremen. Yeah, 2004.
That was the last time they won it.
What's that, Craig?
That was obviously the last time Werder Bremen won it as well.
Yeah, and then the other one, God, it's really not a lot of teams. The other one is 1998, Kaiserslautern in 1998. Yeah,
good team back in those days. Okay, here we go. I'm trying to find the last time. I think it was 85. Aberdeen won 84-85 with Fergie. Of course, they won the European Cup too, right? Beat Real Madrid. You don't. Actually, he went back to back, Fergie. And then prior to that, Dundee United had won it, and then it was Celtic. But apart from that, yeah, Rangers, and it's just, Jesus Christ. You got to change this up, boys. You really have to.
Rangers weren't even in the mix for years.
My question to you guys is, how average are all these other teams? Are they not good? Are these sides just not good enough?
No, they're not good enough. They're even close.
No money as well.
Are they almost semi-pro? I want to know that level. Like, are they MLS teams? Are they, you know, CPL teams? What are we talking about?
Look at it this way. The best Scottish players are either playing for Celtic or Rangers. Mm-hmm. And if you're a top talent that's at another club, you're in England.
Yeah.
That's where the best
players are. And even lower division in England.
What's that? Yeah.
Celtic pay quite well. Let's put it that way. Their budgets are extremely high compared to the rest of them. The rest of them are, I couldn't even tell you what their budgets are, but they're obviously more than CPL, about 800,000. Those teams, I mean, they would snap at the chance to go to the second division in the championship. Oh. Because those guys are paying, you know, a few million bucks a year for players down there, and you're not making that at St. Johnston.
Yeah, you're talking like Wrexham third division kind of thing. These teams,
not
these
Wrexham, lower end league championship, League One. No? Before you're playing for like a Dundee or an Aberdeen these days, you'd be doing that, wouldn't you? For sure, league championship for sure.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Listen, they fill a lot of those stadiums. They're smaller stadiums. You do wonder what the future is. You know, the whole talk of Celtic Rangers, if they went to English football in their pyramid there, whatever division, would that benefit Scottish football or would it hurt Scottish football?
It would benefit those two clubs. And obviously the league itself would be, but that's never happening. They're never coming to the Premier League.
No, I know they're not. But if they did, with an Aberdeen or a Dundee who suddenly has a spot in Europe, for example, because they're winning the Scottish Premier League, does that help slowly build the foundation of Scottish football very slowly, or would it cripple it losing the two biggest clubs?
Well,
from a TV standpoint, no one's watching that league otherwise.
No, they're not watching it anyway.
That's true.
But you think, right? If you're, you know, an Aberdeen or Hibs or whoever, you know, at the beginning of the season, you're not winning the league. You're not winning the league. So you go in there to support your team, hope you have a good season, but realistically, you're not winning. So if Celtic and Rangers weren't there, at least you got an opportunity to win the league, get into Europe. I think it'd be more exciting for the other teams.
Now, if they do well in Europe, they would have to do well because then, depending on the strength of the league, if they don't do well, then you win the league, then you're playing a pre-qualifier to get in, you know, which they do often now in Scottish football, the Europa League and such. But it is what
maybe
it is.
Maybe
5 million people live in Scotland. It's the size of Toronto.
It's tiny.
It's actually quite amazing they have as many teams supported as they do.
Yeah, it's true. Incredible. But I mean, look at Belgium, for example, tiny country as well. Look at the quality that comes through Belgium.
Mm-hmm.
Holland.
Rangers and Celtic, the best chance they would ever have is if they got brought into the discussions about a European Super League.
Yeah, almost that second tier Super League, which has been discussed for a long time, right? Forget that. It'd be actual leagues of like Portugal, Scotland, Holland, not France, perhaps Belgium, them going together on something. That's been discussed, right? Which is interesting, isn't it? You know, outside the top echelon, would that help those countries? I don't know. But regardless, Celtic champions, they're crowned, what, about a month ago now, wasn't it? It's a while back now. TFC, a team that isn't going to win, you know, just going out there, support your team, do the best you can. Wow. It's not just how they're losing right now, but it is how they're losing, more than just the losses, right? Because there aren't that many losses, not many wins. Lose to Austin in injury time. 404 minutes now without a goal for TFC. Insigne didn't start in this one. We don't know why. Might not be an injury. Don't know. Post-match, Bernadeschi, who was hauled off, what, with half an hour left or thereabouts? Here's his comments. He said in the press conference, we don't play. We need to have a little bit more tactics. We need an idea of how we play. We need maybe something different. Boom. Them some strong words. And I'm pretty sure they're pointed at one guy, aren't they? The manager, surely. There's big problems at TFC at the moment.
It's falling apart at the seams. That's not never a good sign. And it doesn't surprise me. I mean, most footballers, given the opportunity, they're not going to take any of the blame themselves. You know, point the finger somewhere else and the opposite direction as well. Never like that about somebody pointing a finger at anybody or talking about that publicly.
Yeah.
He seems
Foot injury apparently with Insigne, but I don't know what's going on with him. They're going to end up paying about $1 million a goal for him.
Jimmy, what does your gut tell you right now? I mean, you've been at that club, you played at that club. It's dysfunctional, clearly, at the moment. Now, injuries are still a valid excuse in many regards, right? I mean, 10 injuries. I know Hedges came back this past weekend, which is something. Yeah. But do you get a sense that there's something – is change coming there, like, very soon?
Yeah, I think it has to. look, there's no doubt there's issues. We've seen it. You know, the players arguing with the fans. The fans are fighting in the stands, having brawls after matches, and now players are publicly coming out saying that tactically they don't know what they're doing. And then we don't work on these sort of things in training. We're just out there just playing. So when it gets to that point where they are right now, yeah, there definitely has to be a change. I'd imagine that in-house, they're probably having some very strong conversations, especially with the board, trying to figure out what their next moves is. I mean, look, at the end of the day, you know, Craig's right. You know, players always tend to point fingers and the players are saying things, but the easy option for a club is to fire their manager rather than try to fire a whole team. And the players do have more power at times than what a manager does.
When a manager's son is captain, though, doesn't it make it harder?
Yeah,
I do. It does, right? I mean, more awkward. I'm not saying they won't do it, but it's going to be extremely uncomfortable.
Yeah.
My dad can beat up your dad.
Yeah.
When Mr. Bernadeschi comes in and takes over the team, it'd be really awkward.
That is awkward.
The problem
is shite.
The problem is they're so busy with getting this Raptors thing sorted out, getting this Toronto Maple Leafs sort of thing sorted out. And then there's a long weekend and all the bosses are at the cottage, so they're probably not meeting until maybe next few days. And whether they want to do anything with Toronto FC at this moment, I know they don't. Obviously, that's clear that they don't want to fire Rob Bradley, but it's just every single game, which is just something else, just building and building and building, and something's got to give. We said this two, three weeks ago. So,
friend of the show, Jeffrey Nesca, he tweeted out this, listen, we all love Fedder, it's Bernadeschi. But does he have his coaching badges or literally any experience in the front office of any club? He's a player. His vision is myopic. Everyone here is taking his take as gospel, and boy, oh boy, it isn't. He's got skin in this game. Bang on, right? You know, the fans love to jump on the player's side, and I get it. And maybe he's got a very good point here, Bernadeschi. But it isn't quite that plain sailing, right? Bernadeschi knows he's got the fans on his side, and he can apply pressure. But what does he know, really, apart from playing football? He doesn't.
Well, no, just the fact that I know some of these guys, I've played with managers too, that are so brilliant that you know the next guy comes along and he's not in that class. But still, Bob Bradley is a good coach. He's proven he's a good coach. And I'm sure tactically he's well aware of what's going on. But he's having a hell of a time getting this team with the injury problems that they have. And then with the attitude of some of these star players doesn't bode well.
Well, the other thing too, Craig, I was thinking, when you guys are talking about the Prem and the pressure to get rid of these managers, if Bob Bradley was in the Prem and he had this long-term vision and this building process for TFC, right? You would probably be saying, hey, let's watch the progress. Let's see what's happening. Has it passed that zone though, where it looks just disheveled? Like this is not a place that is happening right now.
Yeah, I think generally, I think the patience by the supporters was there last season. That there were some weak links and they needed to address them. And then they were addressed, they thought, and now other issues are popping up. And
well, still 12, 13 dudes injured still too,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, and with a couple results, everything would change. A couple results, wins, they're back in the playoff picture. Like, they're right in the playoff picture. There's so many teams make it, for goodness
sake. Yeah. Well, look at Montreal, right? They started off, I mean, they have the craziest record. There's no draws. I don't think they've drawn. It's either like win, loss. I think they're 5-7, 5-8 or something, like 6-8.
Yeah, they lost again this weekend. They're now, they're just 2 points up on TFC, right? You know, right. I know they lost this weekend, but look at Montreal. Good for them. They're 2 points up on TFC. Things aren't that sunshiny there.
Yeah.
But I mean, Jimmy, you know ownership there. You know ownership at TFC. What do you think happens here? So you got your two star players making a shitload of money, not getting on with the manager, who's in the second year of a long-term deal and has a long-term vision, which he sold to ownership.
Yeah.
What happens? Is it status quo for a while, or is it going to be a move soon?
I think there will be a move soon. I think so. I think there has to be. You know, sometimes when it goes on for too long, you know, maybe Bob's lost the players at the moment, and that's why they're coming out and talking publicly. Bernadeschi, you know, he's used to winning. He's played under some fantastic managers, and now he's in a situation where he's just doesn't feel things are right and tactically aren't right. And for him to even talk about on the training pitch that they haven't been doing certain things, it's got to be addressed. And I definitely do think there will be some change. The board will obviously do their due diligence. They'll be watching everything, talking to players, probably talking to the coaching staff to figure out what exactly is the problem here. And it's hard as well if a coach has lost the players, how do you get them back? It's very, very difficult to do that because of respect out the window now.
I'll say it again, right? And we laugh about it, but it's a valid point. When the manager who's lost the room, when his son is the captain of that team, it's a real complication here, right? Now, the captain isn't playing at the moment. He's injured. He's out for a while. So presumably he's not around the team as he would have done been in the past, right? He's not part of that group, certainly on match days as much. He's obviously there amongst the team, you know, and training days, whatever he's doing. But do you think Bernadeschi is as vocal if Michael Bradley isn't hurt and is still captaining that team every single match day?
Wouldn't matter if the results are the same. You're getting better results and nobody's saying anything.
Yeah.
Do you think Michael understands it?
Jimmy, say you're in that position, Bob Bradley, right now, and now you're losing the dressing room and you got the Italians speaking out. What would you do? What is the solution here? I don't know what the end game is.
But to go public, like Berner has, right? To go public against the coach in the media, you know, that's not like a, you know, behind closed doors, keep it in-house, boys. We'll sort this out. Hey, Gaff, I want to have a chat with you. Things on. He's gone public.
Yeah.
It's not a good look.
No, it's not. And the thing is, too, you know, Bob would have saw that after the match, right? Obviously, going back to the hotel or to the airport, you're looking at it thinking, oh, Jesus Christ, what next? Now we've got the players coming out and saying all this. But he'll have to pull in Bernadeschi as well and have a chat with him. More or less saying, why did you do this? Why not come sit with me? Maybe they've had these conversations behind closed doors. Maybe they've talked. And it's just got to a boiling point where it's enough's enough and the players want change. So that's the only problem. We're guessing what's happened, but you know, something's 100% not right when the players start coming out and going public about the situation.
If I was Bob Bradley, I'd throw it right back at him. I'd maybe have a meeting and go, okay, what do you suggest we do right now? We got so-and-so out. These guys are injured. What do you suggest we do?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Nothing wrong with that.
No, there's nothing wrong with sitting down and talking to your players, because look, at the end of the day, you've got to understand your players. They've got to buy into what you're preaching. So, and you've got to get them on your side. You need to have these one-on-one conversations all the time with the players. And if things aren't working, you've got to adapt to the players. You have to adapt. And yeah, you're asking players to play in different positions. You've got a lot of injuries, but you need players to step up and perform. And they're just not right now. They don't look good at all. You know, and maybe that was a bit of a statement too, where you're taking off Bernadeschi in the 67th minute, thinking, right, okay, taking you off now, and we're going to see if we can get a win, get a result here. And obviously he takes him off. You could see Bernadeschi was pissed off with that, because he looks over the bench with a little cheeky smile and walks off the pitch.
Well, the summer's approaching, boys. We're almost here. The European season's finished. I mean, if you want to completely turn a team around and sell players and sign players, the time is approaching, like we did this time last year. It isn't. Hasn't worked out quite as well as hoped, but I guess it depends on how much the ownership and the board put on the injuries, right? That's a question. But when we sit here next week, let me ask you, is Bob Bradley still coach, Craig?
You know, where that club is run, and I couldn't tell you.
that was the craziest approach. If people are watching, you can't watch this, but Craig was nodding his head. And
if there's like a video of what resignation looks like,
yes,
that was it. Like, yeah. I don't fucking know.
No, it's just frustration. I think everybody's just frustrated now, aren't they? I mean, look, I love the club. I hate seeing it where it is right now. And let's be honest, and I know firsthand that, you know, Bob Bradley does work his ass off, and the coaching staff there, but things are, they're just not going well for him at the moment.
Bring in Nick Dazovich.
Yeah.
Nick Dazovich, done some wonders out there, the younger players in Vancouver, just sitting there waiting, pro license, talented guy.
Craig, he's Canadian.
I know, that's a problem. Like,
oh, tell me about it, being Canadian with a pro license.
There's another guy not so far, who's good with young players. That's some real, knows the DNA of the club. Hey,
just jumped over Jimmy, eh? He just jumped right over him.
Fucking looked at me as well when he said it.
I know.
He did. Just over top.
Well, I feel for the guys that go out and get their pro licenses. You know, being Canadian and being Canadian generally, what it used to be like a player, but it's, you know, for coaches, it's, you know, like an anchor on your back. That's why really Nick Dazovich would be better off under a Croatian flag. You know, what the opportunities that would bring would be greater than having being Canadian international. It's very, very strange, very strange. And they think, Jimmy, you're part of this too. You go, you get your pro license, you're going to get some respect for having your pro license and doing that with all the other European players and blah, blah, blah. And in Canada, it's not, we don't support our own very well here.
Luckily, the rest of Canadian soccer is a nice, well-oiled machine. It's just the coaching area that's a bit of a problem right now. So, you know, we're getting there, boys. Don't worry. Don't worry. Montreal lost, as I mentioned, to New York. Vancouver beat Seattle 2-0.
You know, it seems like
every weekend, doesn't it? Vancouver, but that's a big win. Good for them. They're in playoff contention. They're in the playoff spots. Good. Thanks, Whitecaps. Jimmy leaves right now. As I was about to mention, CPL. Jimmy, come back. Here he comes. All right, because running back now. Ooh, CPL. Yeah,
I thought it was over.
CPL. Jimmy, Cavs. Cavs beat Ottawa 2-0. Valor. Yeah, they tied Pacific 1-1. Halifax fell to York 3-0 at Halifax. Wanderers, I should say. And Forge tied Vancouver 0-0. The Forge dominated that one. Observations, Jimmy, from another good weekend of CPL action.
Yeah, I thought Cavs got their first one of the win of the season. They were going into that match with five draws, and Ottawa was actually coming off a great win the week before. So, you know, they'll be disappointed with their performance, but the Cavs will be happy because it pushes them up the table. Forge again would be disappointed that they didn't pick up 3 points against Vancouver. Vancouver did well though defensively. They were organized, made it difficult for Forge, who picked up a point but are still sitting top of the table. Halifax Wanderers, they're not looking the best at the moment. Played 6 games, still haven't won a match. They've had 5 draws. They lost to York United on weekend there. What was it, 3-0 or something? And overall, I thought there were some good performances. And Tommy Wheeldon Jr., our friend, will be very happy that he got his first win of the season.
Yeah, it could have been more, right? It really was.
Yes. Yeah.
It was a good goal. That Escalante goal that was disallowed was too bad, because that would have been an absolute beauty. Yeah. It was that kind of weird one with, was it Bevan offside just behind the goalkeeper in the previous breakdown? It was an odd one, but yeah, 2-0 there. Oh, but the Valor Pacific game, you know, I'm sure they got plans for eventually a soccer-specific stadium, but IG Field, it's just too cavernous.
Yeah, it's way too big.
You know, it doesn't sound great. I mean, it's great when they hit the crossbar, and there's a few of those in this game. It sounds great. It's like a ping in hockey, but it's because there's no crowd noise. It's not that the crowd isn't there. It's just it's so cavernous stadium. They're so spread out. It doesn't feel like a lot of these stadiums.
It is a nice stadium.
Oh, it's a beautiful stadium, but it's just too big.
And it's out in the middle of nowhere. It's not downtown. It's a bit difficult to get to. And, you know, even if they do have 10,000 people in there, it looks empty. Mm. And they do. They've got some good supporters. They've got good little fan base there. But you're right. They need to be in a smaller stadium. The stadium's just massive. And whether you like it or not, it's Blue Bomber Stadium. They get big crowds there. They love their CFL. But they definitely need a smaller stadium and closer to the city center where people can get to it easy.
Yeah. Fellas, what was your – sorry, Craig. What was your – I know I had to split to leave my bag on the – my garment bag on the side of the road, so I had to miss the Mark Noonan interview, CPL commissioner. What was your takeaways from that? With the York, all that kind of stuff, where is everyone standing with that?
Well, York's interesting, my Jimmy, because, I mean, like – Mark says there's some very interested parties, but also on the same interview, you know, he's mentioning how much money these owners are bleeding and have bled so far. Yeah. So they've got to be some very patient owners who are in it for the right reasons. So I don't know who these people are, Jimmy. You know, you're closer to that side of things. Do you know who they are? Do you know where we stand?
No, I don't. I don't know who's looking at the team, whether they'll keep it at York or maybe move them somewhere else. I just think that the way it's run right now needs to be a lot better. They need to bring a general manager in or a sporting director who can bring in the players. They've had too much turnover. And I think one of the biggest mistakes that they did too was when you start a club at the beginning of the year called York 9 or beginning of the league, you know, they had some good fans that turned out the fan base was good. They had some good games against Montreal. The supporter section was great. You're starting to grow a brand, and then all of a sudden you bring somebody in who says, okay, we need a rebrand after year one. So now they changed the name, they changed the color. They've lost the supporters group because they were frustrated, so they left. But I think they just need to bring somebody in that can overlook this club and run it properly, because it's not being run the best at the moment.
And the venue itself.
They need someone that's going to come in who actually lives in the city as well. And it's got a connection with the community, with the fans, the city.
I just don't know where, I mean, there's talk about Woodbine, right? Eventually putting a stadium there. I mean, right now where it is, York Lions Stadium is a campus. There's no bars around there, pubs. You want that kind of feeling, right? To bring fans in. Yeah, I know the subway's right there, which is really handy, but once you get there, apart from, you know, great pies, get your beer in this food. But I mean, around the stadium though, there isn't anything, right? And you look at any successful sports team around the stadium, you have something, a community or just an entertainment area. And right now, where they are, it just doesn't seem to work, but I don't know what the solution is. Toronto is a big event city as well, right? And that's part of what it is. If you move them to, I don't know, Varsity, Lamport, are you doing any better? I don't know.
That's a great-looking stadium, though, Varsity.
Location-wise, it's brilliant, right? But again, it's just Toronto is Toronto, right?
Yeah.
We say we're a great sports city. I don't think we are. We love the event. We love the majors, the biggest sporting events. Yeah, that's great. But smaller sports, smaller leagues don't generally do too well.
Everybody talked about the population, and Mark referred to it as well. Like, this is a massive population. But look at the Toronto Lynx, how many years they were around and just begging for people to go see them. And the same thing. I mean, you know, Paul Stolzeri played for them out there at Centennial Park. Okay, there's nothing around. They just could not draw flies. Go back further, the North York Rockets. What a struggle. What a struggle it is. So history is repeating itself in a way that just, unless you set it up in a way that you got yourself a really tight little community, tight stadium with everything around it and the perfect scenario, the same thing is going to happen over again. And that's what's happening with York.
Yeah.
But still, Wonga, if you haven't, did you get a chance to listen to the interview yet, Wonga?
I didn't yet. No, I'm going to listen to it today.
It's a good interview. It's interesting. Yeah, it was interesting. Basically, Mark Noonan came across as someone who's just kind of sick and tired of being public enemy number one, as the CSB is.
Yeah.
Rightly or wrongly. You know, I'm not going to put an opinion on that right now. But from his standpoint, he goes, enough's enough. Like, we're doing the best we freaking can here. And there's a lot that's not being said or put out there. I think the major point which we spoke about after the interview was the fact that they have proposed an improved deal to Canada Soccer March the 7th and haven't heard back yet.
That, when I read that, I was like, oh my God, Canada Soccer, please.
Now, between March 7th and now, there's been a complete upheaval at Canada Soccer.
Of course.
But surely pick up the phone and say, okay, we know, we got it. We'll be in touch. Something.
Well, that's your sales team. Why would you not?
So there's... That's why I asked the question. Is there acrimony between you and Canada Soccer? And he didn't say there was, but clearly there's something going on there.
Like,
Canada Soccer seems happy to put the emphasis and the target on their back right now.
It's just interesting to me because you're literally, these are partners. And if you can't pick up the phone and talk to your partner, even about the upheaval, about, hey, let's have a united stance on our communication, on how we're going to approach the media, how we're going to be seen. And when I read that on Twitter from you, Sharms, I was just like, wow, that's, sorry, it was our FP account, but it was Sharms. It was quite, there's a level of revealing and things that aren't said, right? And he actually said it too. So there's a couple things going on there.
Yeah. Fun times, like I said, fun times to be working in Canadian soccer. This week, by the way, Canadian Championship semifinals, Montreal Forge on Wednesday, 7 p.m. and Pacific Vancouver, 10 p.m. on Wednesday. So it's a big week for Canadian soccer, and that's been a really solid tournament so far. Thoroughly enjoyed it. So make sure you watch those matches. You can catch those matches, of course, on Fubo TV and One Soccer. All right, boys. Anything else you want to get to, or shall we?
Absolutely. No, there's one last thing. I want everybody to go to chickenonaraft.com. It is our friend and colleague JC's link that he sent us this morning. Instead of the platform link, he sent us both. So chickenonaraft.com.
Well, here's the thing. It's a long weekend, and I thought, why not bring some levity by putting in a funny link? So everyone, please go to chickenonaraft.whatever. And check it out and see how long you can last. Chicken on a raft.
JC, is it yours or did you just find it?
No, I found that like 10 years ago. Someone sent it to me and it just sticks on my, like at the bottom of your browser, atop your browser. It has like your bookmarks and it's been there for over 10 years. So I'm like, oh, let's do this. And actually, if you go back and look at that email that I sent you, there's some other little tidbits in there too. And that doesn't apply to anyone listening. So,
hey, Wonger.
Yeah.
So good.
Yeah.
How far did you drive before you knew that you've left your bag on the side?
4.5 hours, Craig. I noticed when I said to my daughters, I go, did you guys bring my bag in? And they're like, no.
Oh, you're blaming the daughters, bag, are you?
Dad. And I'm like, it's on the sidewalk. There's a really well dressed, or actually averagely dressed person walking around with my bag. And
someone's got
my,
like four plaid red shirts, right?
Yeah, and they're and they're snorting my cholesterol medicine right now.
Wonger was texting me. I left my bag on the side, and I don't know what I'm doing, and don't know what's next. What am I doing? I go, it's okay.
Someone had a great long weekend. They got a whole new wardrobe, a CPAP machine, and some cholesterol medication. So hey, party on, everyone! Party on! All right, we're back on Wednesday. Hope you enjoyed that, everyone. Enjoy the long weekend. Keep buying newspapers. Bye.
Follow us on Twitter at @footy_prime and on Instagram at @footyprimeIG.
Hope the gout's not acting up.
No, I'm kidding.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.